Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our Aiken City Council meeting on September 8th, 2008. We appreciate everyone being here this evening. And as we go through our agenda, if you have any comments, you may speak to the issues. And as we get started, if you would like to, please stand with us for a prayer and a pledge of allegiance.
Almighty and loving God, we bow our heads before you in deepest gratitude for the abundant blessings which you have bestowed upon us. We thank you for the opportunity of being the privileged inhabitants of this city. Lord, we know that the peace and freedom which we enjoy is a result of many sacrifices made by those who offered their lives in defense of our nation. We pray that you keep alive their memory and that you protect those who valiantly serve today in our armed forces as they continue to make freedom possible for us. Bless those in the city and county of Aiken who work so hard to keep us safe as we go about our daily activities. And we ask special blessings on Corporal Chris Carter, who will be recognized for his achievements in keeping our city safe. We thank you, Lord, for bringing us together at this city council meeting, and we ask that you bless all who attend and participate in any way. We ask for God's help to give our individual and collective gifts to our community, to give of ourselves in ways that make a difference to our families, to our town, to our nation, to keep our wits during a time replete with distractions and political uncertainty. In this political season, give us the skill to responsibly participate in the political process in a civil way, with respect and appreciation for the candidates and their supporters who seek to serve our city, state, or nation. Empower us to be positive as we speak about those we support and respectful of those with whom we disagree. Remember, when all is said and done, that we live in the greatest country on earth. And one final plea. Last week, a former mayor and city council member decided to run for one of the highest offices in the land. Please don't give such thoughts to our mayor. We want to keep him here in Aiken. We ask all these things as we pray in your name. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This is the copy. Does this go to Susan? This is the copy.
Dick, don't worry. I have no plans. Even if asked, I would not accept. Are there any additions or deletions to the agenda this evening? If not, do we have a motion and second to approve the agenda as written?
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve the agenda as proposed.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
And second. Okay. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Next item is minutes. The consideration of the minutes of the regular meeting of August 11th, 2008. Any discussion on the minutes? If not, do we have a motion and a second?
I move we accept the minutes as submitted.
Okay.
Second.
We have a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Under presentations, we're very fortunate, very, very fortunate tonight to have two outstanding people with us. And the first one will be recognition of Corporal Chris Carter. And Mr. Duke, I'll turn that over to you, sir.
Yes, it is indeed a great privilege. I'm going to ask Pete Frommer to come forward so he can go ahead and speak on this. But we are just blessed in our city that we have numerous men and women working for our public safety department. Chris is just one of them. And these individuals really just give their life day in, day out. And We could probably recognize many of them, but this is a real special award night, and we just felt like it was important for our community and council to meet this young man who has done so much for our community. So, Pete, if you would.
Okay. Thank you, Roger. Ditto to what Roger says. I tell you what, if you looked in the dictionary for professionalism and a caring officer, and you opened up the page, I think you would see the picture of Chris Carter in there. Chris has been with the department for 8 years, an outstanding officer. Really cares about people, really cares about making our streets safe. Last month, Chris was presented an award in Columbia from the Mothers Against Drunk Drivers and selected as the Officer of the Year in South Carolina. Chris, I think last year we had 50-some DUI cases, and Chris made like 24 or 25 of those cases. He's out there at night. He's vigilant, watching for people not wearing seat belts. He does an excellent job, and we're just so proud that he was bestowed this award by the Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. So, Chris, if you step up here, please.
Yes, our group is in this suit. We're just glad for keeping our street safe. The suit up.
Thank you, Chef.
If we can, Chris brought his wife with us. So,
yes.
His wife, Karen.
Yes, Karen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pete. We know how important our support system is, whether it be any member of a family, especially our wives. Karen, we do appreciate your support of Chris. Chris, thank you so much. Without a doubt, we have one of the best public safety departments anywhere around. Time and time again, they prove how diligent they are and how caring they are. And if we only had time, we could talk briefly about how they react with the kids. This is something that amazes me, and it surprises me when I hear just how much they are involved with our young people that not many people know about. So we thank you for that effort, too. And Pete, thank you and the whole department for the effort with the young people. All kinds of activities and learning experiences that you give them. Number two presentation is recognition of Zach Halford. I'm going to go down here, and I'll ask Zach right now if he would meet me down at the other mic.
Know it.
I won't hog it all. Let me ask a question, though, of everybody here. Just raise your hand. How many of you have ridden a bike 4,000 miles? 3,000? 2,000? 1,000?
Maybe.
10 miles? I'm sure there's some maybe with 10,000. But tonight we're honoring Zach for his efforts on behalf of the Cancer Lymphoma Society organization for raising money for that purpose, for those purposes, and for the research for those purposes. Zach left in May on a trip, 4,000 miles cross-country. And returned July 27th, I think, something around in that order.
Yeah.
And Zach, we're all so proud of you for that. In doing that, you know, you have showed just the highest of character. And I'm going to read this proclamation from our city council, if you will. Whereas Zach Halford has at great personal sacrifice completed a 4,000-mile bicycle ride across the country to raise money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, and whereas he rode through extreme weather conditions, and whereas along the way he slept wherever he could in harsh living conditions, often in the cold night air, and whereas in doing so, Zach has demonstrated patience, diligence, determination, compassion, and generosity. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the city of Aiken, South Carolina, congratulates and recognizes Zach Holford as a citizen of character, and signed by all of our council members, Zach. And thank you very much, and keep up the good work. You're a role model, and you can affect so many people by the things you do. And you've got a wonderful start right here.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, this is a little loose, so don't let it, let the glass slip out.
All right. Thank you
very much.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, City Council. And I'd just like to thank the City of Aiken. If I had my own award to give you guys as a community, I would. I've seen a lot of towns, cities, hamlets even across the way, and this place is it's a great place to grow up in and to be from, and I was very proud to tell everyone about it through those 15 states. So thanks a lot, guys and ladies. Yes, sir. 6 pounds.
Congratulations again, sir.
Thank you, Mayor.
Good job, Zach.
Congratulations.
Under old business, I beg your pardon. How about the support system there? Standing up, please. The Holfords, Flo, and Doug. and others there for you, too, as well. I know. There are a lot of people for you. Thank you so much. Under old business, item one is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend the land development regulations regarding maintenance guarantees. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is, I'll read it by title only. It's an ordinance amending the land regulations of the City of Aiken regarding maintenance guarantees. We've been working on this for a long time and looking at our subdivision regulations as to what changes we may need to have. We first brought this to you in June, and we've been holding back for the last several months so that we could sit down with some of the developers and builders in our community to talk about the ordinance and to hopefully have a better understanding with them and them with us as to how the ordinance would work and what modifications may be needed. In the meantime, we have also received some information from the Department of Health and Environmental Control, the permitting department or division, which basically is stating that once we have approved the water and sewer, in other words, once it's installed and the pressure testing is done on it and we allow water to flow into those pipes that could be used by anybody, then in essence they're looking at the city or the county or whatever the agency is to take over that system. So I asked if they would send that to us in writing, and you have a letter from DHEC which is making that statement. Therefore, we're in need to accept the water and sewer collection system prior to the maintenance guarantee expiring. And that's okay, because one of the purposes of you passing this ordinance tonight is there will be a maintenance guarantee of 2 years, and that maintenance guarantee will have the necessary funding in the form of a letter of credit or some bank certification saying that if anything does go wrong, that this is the here's the money to go ahead and to take care of those areas that need to be corrected. Part of this that we have gone back and forth on is concerning to what amount of money should be set aside where it used to be a bond. Again, we're talking about a letter of credit that we could get a lot easier from the bank. What's in the ordinance tonight is 120% of the cost of the project. But once the infrastructure is completed, the road is completed, the water and sewer is completed, the storm drainage has been completed, then we would reduce that down to a lower amount. So it'd go from that 120% down to 20%. Now, that's where we're at right now. I'm sorry, it was at 125%. I'm sorry, Dick is nudging me here with his elbow. They are going to be, and the reason I said 120% because we have a couple of individuals here tonight that would like to discuss with you possibly lowering that. But again, the whole idea here is finding a better way that we could deal with problems that are in the field that would give us the necessary funding to take care of those problems. Now, to say that, to the most part, we don't have problems, especially with the water, the sewer, and the storm drainage. The only real problems that I recall having in the last, and Larry's out there, and he'll be willing to come up and talk more about this should you desire. Water and sewer, last 20 years, we might have had a couple of two, three situations where we've had some major problems in the first couple of years. Where we generally would see a problem, if we're going to have a problem, is in the roadway. And many times that's because of two different possibilities. One, the compaction over a water or sewer utility or storm drain, which sewer lines need to be in the ground typically 6 feet or lower in the ground. So again, you can imagine they dig down 6 feet, they have to compact up in lifts. Well, sometimes they don't compact up in lifts properly. But sometimes sewer lines are 10 to 20 feet in the ground. And so over a period of time, we'll sometimes see a little bit of a sinking, especially over the sanitary sewers, which needs to be corrected. The other thing that sometimes has failed is we have seen occasionally where the asphalt maybe doesn't have the right mix design, or maybe it was laid at not the proper temperature. Typically, you'll see your asphalt being laid at around 250 degrees. But if it's much colder, it doesn't get the compaction and can tend to fall apart. That's a very rare situation, but those situations do occur, and that is why we're asking that for that 125%, being reduced down to 20% once everything is completed and we've gone out and made the final inspections. So before tonight, this was approved on June 23rd, and it is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend the land development regulations regarding maintenance guarantees.
Thank you, sir. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance. So if anyone in the audience would like to speak on this issue, you certainly may do so. Okay.
Good evening. My name is Pat Cunning, 113 Mulberry. We did go over this with Larry, and I think that we were in basic agreement, Mr. Mayor, except we have some issues specifically related to 6.5, Roger, and this is important because I just need to know that we understand, and I've got about three issues. I think these things can be worked out, but and I want to make sure I got the right one. This is a dedication of improvements, right? Upon receipt of the operating permit for the water and sanitary sewer systems from the state of South Carolina, DHEC, an offer of dedication shall be considered for those systems by City Council. Then it says, prior to final plat approval, an offer of dedication of improvements must be submitted to inform of the City of Aiken Engineer may only be accepted by the city through enactment of a resolution, which we understand. The problem is, prior to consideration of the dedication by City Council, as-builts of all improvements in a digital form acceptable to the city engineer shall be submitted. Roger, what I'm concerned about is that one sentence when it says prior to final plat approval. The only reason why, and let me explain what we do at Woodside, which y'all are aware of. At Woodside, we get a HUD approval in order to sell our property. In order to get this HUD approval, we must put up a maintenance bond in order to get a final plat. That's prior to all improvements being done. But we put up the construction bond for the, not a maintenance bond, but the construction bond. After the water and sewer is installed and approved by DHEC, in order to obtain a building permit, that's when we normally get a building permit. So that one provision, if I'm reading it correctly, in order to get the final plat approval, we'd have to have it all in the ground anyway. So this performance guarantee becomes mute if I'm reading 6.5 correctly. You understand what my question is, Roger, on that prior to final plat approval? Because you can't deed anything until you have final plat approval is the way we've been operating on. Now, you can get, the way it is now, you can get a final plat approval by putting up the performance bond. And we agree with the 2 years, which is already in effect. We don't have an issue with that. That one provision I'm concerned about, because if that's what we're doing, the rest of it becomes mute, because you won't be able to deed until everything's in the ground and you couldn't get a building permit or you couldn't do anything until everything's finished. Roger, that, am I reading that right?
I'm going to ask Larry and Ed to... Larry, why don't you come up to the mic here?
And I've got a couple other things.
And then you can just stay up here, too.
Go ahead, Pat, if you...
The other issue is, and the way I read this, I'm concerned about, is the performance guarantee 2 years, and then we'll have a 2 year maintenance guarantee. What I'm concerned about, Roger, if it's 4 years going in for the performance, that means we've got to go to the bank and get a 4 year performance guarantee, which basically costs us four times as much as it was costing us. I'm concerned about that. I think you protect the city the same way if you have a 2 year performance bond. If we don't get the work done in 2 years, it's right in here. You call the bond and the bank pays you. But I'm concerned about whether it's actually going to be required of a 4 year performance bond and a 2 year maintenance. We understand, we agree 100% on the 2 year maintenance and a 2 year performance. We agree with that. What I'm concerned about is, out of the box, we're having to give the city, especially in Woodside's case, to get a HUD approval, we'd have to give you a 4 year performance bond, which actually would cost us four times as much as we paid before. Those are our two major issues. The other issue is the 125%. We feel like 120% is more than enough. And one of the reasons for the 120% is that most banks make their loan based upon 80% of the appraised value, which the loan that they're making on the subdivision would cover the 20% above. Now, what this means is that the 120%, we actually have a bid document from a contractor. What this means is we're putting up 20% more than that bid document. So we feel like that the 120% is more than enough to protect the city if something happens, and especially within that 2 year period, you actually got 20% more than the actual contract. So, and I did meet with Larry. I don't want to speak for him on this 120%, but those are the questions, Larry.
Trying to take the questions in order for you. First of all, the performance guarantee of whether it's 100 or 125%, that's going to be up to council, obviously, but that is released up to 80% as soon as the infrastructure is in place. Performance means just that. We don't hold it for 4 years. If the water line is in place, then they can write us a letter and we will release the amount for the water line. So that is, that is ratcheted down until we hit that final number that would be what is left over for the maintenance guarantee, which would either be the 20 or the 25% as council is debating tonight. At that point, all improvements would have been made. Streets, all utilities, everything would be completed because there would be no performance amount left. It would be strictly the maintenance guarantee. So If they're going to take 4 years to build a section, certainly it could take 4 years then for them to be holding their performance money. I would not think it would take them 4 years. I hope not anyway, Pat, to do that.
The question, Larry, is what do I give you, and how many years do you, does it show? If our website comes up and says we want to finish our subdivision, how many years do you require?
The way that this reads, you give us a 2 year, either 120 or 125%.
2 year performance bond.
That's 120, 125% period of everything. Okay, we hold that until you get all of your infrastructure, streets, everything in place. As that is being drawn down, you can draw it down to a maximum of 80%. Then when everything's done, then we adjust it to either the 20 or the 25%, and that's your maintenance section. So essentially what we've done is we've rolled the bonds into two. We used to require 15% maintenance and 110% on your completion or performance bond. That's where we ended up with the original 125%. So essentially what we're having done is everything is rolled into one, and I keep using the term bond. We like letter of credit much better because it's much easier to use. But we would have that in the beginning. That would be a two-year time period. If you did not get everything completed for some odd reason, and you could not complete, let's say, if you were trying to complete 6 miles of roads and utilities and you only got four completed, then we would have to sit down and say, when are you going to complete this four or extend it or something like that? So there would be some give and take, some negotiation in there to make certain the city was covered on an additional bonding amount if those were not completed within the two-year period. Does that answer that question before I move on?
The only issue, I just want to make sure that...
Pat, can you come to the mic, please?
Yeah. The only confusion was, Roger, when on one of the letters it said the time period for a guarantee could be 4 years. That's what I just want to make sure that the performance guarantee will be 2 years. After the work is completed, we have 2 years from that period of time to give you the maintenance guarantee. Is that correct?
That is correct. And just so council understands, the reason we do it this way, it allows the contractor, developer, or builder to go out there and to start constructing homes prior to all the infrastructure being completed. So in other words, if they want to sell lots or build homes out there and the roads are not completed, the water and sewer lines are not completed, there is a guarantee that they're giving to the city financially that if something would happen to them or their company, we would have the money to complete that infrastructure and allow those citizens or builders a guarantee that this work will be done. There was a period of time in the city's life where we required the developer to have the water lines, the sewer lines, the roads, and storm drainage all completed before they could even start selling lots and building homes. And we thought that was too restrictive. And this gave us an opportunity to work with them so they could recoup some of the money faster and allow them to start selling lots and to build the homes. So that's why there's sometimes that confusion. But we're trying to work with the developers. We know they have a lot of money invested in their property, but we're also trying to make sure, on the other hand, that we're not left with the infrastructure, the citizens are not left with the infrastructure, that there's no one out there to take care of. So that's where we're trying to balance our act with the two of them.
I'm confused with the impact of this DHEC letter. As I understood you when you spoke about that DHEC letter, once it's built and it meets our specifications, according to that, we're required by law to accept it.
Accept the water and the sewer.
Yes.
Yes.
So how does that interface with this? It's already ours. Can I assume once we accept it that we then can't go back to the developer for any problems, or can we?
No, because then there will still be that maintenance guarantee for two more years. When the water and sewer line gets tested, it goes under, you actually take that water line and you fill it with water, Well, you superchlorinate it, get all the bacteria or any other problems out of the lines. You flush it, you fill it with water, you pump it up to a certain pressure, and you keep it at that pressure for a period of time to see if there's any leaks. If after that period of time it still is at maintained that same pressure, you then accept that line. So it's almost a virtual guarantee that line's not going to fail. It's when we say that line meets all the DHEC requirements, it meets all of our city requirements, and we write a letter to DHEC letting them know it meets those requirements for water and sewer, they're saying, we're now expecting that you're going to take it into the system because you have customers on that line, and they need to have a guarantee that someone stands behind it. Currently, the way things are working is until that deed of dedication comes to the city, and we here at the podium accept the water, sewer, and roads, the lines are, in essence, orphaned. It's our water and sewer that's running through those lines. We're charging the customers a certain fee per month. But if something goes wrong, they're still not our lines, and we have had to go back to the Pat Cunnings and other developers and say, your line failed. And he said, well, wait a minute, it's your line. And we have to say, no, we haven't accepted the deed of dedication. So what DHEC is saying is that was wrong. You, as a city, need to accept it as soon as you pass the test and you send us that letter saying it meets your approval.
What we're doing, if I can interrupt, Mr. Dwar, what we're doing with the two-year maintenance portion of the guarantees is by having a letter of credit, taking a very cut-and-dried example, if you will. Let's say the contractor putting the line in used some pipe that had been sun-bleached. That pipe passes the initial pressure test. It does fine for 6 months, and we start seeing multiple leaks along this particular portion of line. And we know we have to go in and totally replace it. We would use the money up to 2 years. We would use the money from the 20 or 25% guarantee to actually pay to go in and replace that pipe. So that's how we're covering the city.
But you only have 20% to use because you've given the rest back when you accepted the road?
And that's 20% of the overall construction, yes, sir. When all of the improvements are completed, all the details are done, then we're down to that 20 or 25%.
And are you satisfied that 20% will take care of the city?
It'll take care of just about everything that we have hit in the past several years. The one factor that I can think of, which was not a contractor problem, but it did occur prior to the line being dedicated, lightning took out a 10-inch main. And it did happen in Woodside. Took out a 10-inch main, took out about 100 yards of road, and they did end up having to replace that. But that was lightning. That wasn't a contractor thing. Now, would the 20% cover that? In that case, it was touch and go. That was a very expensive proposition. That was an act of Mother Nature there. So we really can't look at those, but we have not had any catastrophic failures on a line that's properly tested that I can really think of at all.
Mr. Morris, if you will, explain to me how we arrived at the 125%.
Ed Evans and I got together, and we are requiring, under our current ordinances, we require 15% maintenance, and we require 110% for performance. We added those two together, came up with 125%. In the discussions that we had during the first reading in front of council, 125%, I think we could live either way on that. Of course, any time that you're talking funding, as Mr. Dwar pointed out, sometimes things are more expensive. You know, the more money I can get, the more I like it. Obviously, I'm greedy when it comes to protecting the city, but we have to also think about the folks that are putting money up. So that's going to be one that we could live with. 120, would 125 be better? Certainly it would. But I have talked to Mr. Cunning and told him we could probably live with 120.
This development starts out with 125%. This is for clarity for me. and after 2 years, if your work is complete, it reduces to 80%?
It would reduce after, with all the work complete after 2 years, let's say it took them 2 years to get all the work done, it would reduce to 25%, and I would hold that 25% for an additional 2 years.
If he doesn't complete it, and I know how Patton has worked, I'm sure they'll complete it in 2 years, but if he doesn't complete it in 2 years?
If he doesn't, then what we would require is that we would look at what has not been completed. And when they first post the numbers with us, we require them to give us their bid. So we know what their numbers are. We know what the contractor is expecting to be paid. We would put an inflation factor on that, and we would determine, again, if 6 miles of roads and infrastructure were needed and only four were done, we would take that percentage, put an inflation factor on it, and say this is how much money we additionally need.
Right. Now, with the with this time period of 2 years, given, let's say, if they were going to put in 6 miles of road, and within the first year they had in 3.5-4 miles, can they then come and get that amount reduced?
They can get it reduced.
Within the first year?
Within the first year, based on what they have installed. Again, we would not reduce it, and this is where the 80% comes, Ms. Price, that I would go no more than 80% on any reduction until everything was done, which still, you know, just doing the math at 125% gives me 45% left to make sure that that's all complete. We don't want to be developers in public works. We've done a lot of that with our industrial parks and working, you know, in some other subdivisions. We really don't want to be developers, but we do need it. We do feel we need to protect the city. We need to protect the citizens by doing this. And this was the best way that we could see to do it.
Yeah. Larry, you feel like the 125 would protect us?
Yes, sir.
In every case. See, what I'm having a problem with is the thought that if there is a failure, even at 25 or a little bit past that, let's say, why should the city be responsible unless the city caused the failure? I can see. We're just trying to find a balance here, right? A fairness balance, and whether it's 20 or 25. When do the failures that we see, when do they usually occur?
If there's a problem with a pipe or installation, we will see those in a couple of years. We have not seen any catastrophic failures that this amount of funding would not take care of.
Yeah.
Now, we had one catastrophic failure about 3 years ago on a pump station that had been in existence for about 10 years. Fact is, it was put in 1989, and it failed 3 years ago, so it was even beyond the 10-year period. It was one of ours. It was not put in by a developer, and we had a pipe break that was not supposed to break. That one failure cost over $200,000.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at catastrophic failure with 20-25% covered, I really can't tell you that it would. Normal things that we see, non-catastrophic, we could certainly handle.
Well, 10 years out, we wouldn't have any coverage anyway for that.
You would not.
We would have to repair that. The city would have to cover the cost of that.
That's correct.
Right.
And we do put aside about $1 million a year for infrastructure renewal and also for problems just such as that.
Yeah. Money-wise, Pat, you can speak too, of course. Let me, one more question. Money-wise, what difference does it make when you go from the 120 to 125?
If you got a million-dollar contract, one's going to be putting up a bond, $101.25 million, one's $1.2 million. So the key, Mr. Mayor, is normally the banks have they make the loan based upon the section, and that's the only reason why I had it. Remember, we also have a change that's already been approved, that we now have a licensed engineer inspection requirement that is new, okay? Over and above doubling the 110 to 120. So now we've gone from 110 to 120. Well, it's doubled. If you go from 110 to 120, you know, 110,
120 is a 9% increase.
Well, what I'm saying is, though, but you also have put, you know, the other requirements, it's going to cost us, we figured it, and, you know, I've checked with my engineer, it's going to cost us probably $3,000 or $4,000 a lot to do the inspection because they've got to be on site. And I think he'll, so that's the other requirement we put on it now. Plus, we went up 10%, or you've gone up 15%. I'm saying, you know, can you at least see that, that maybe that, that going from 110 to 120 is reasonable, especially when we put the other requirement of the of an on-site engineer who's got to sign off on it. That's the other thing everybody's forgetting, and that's huge. That's bigger. To be honest with you, that's bigger than 125% is because of the of that, that one requirement. And you know, we said okay, we'll support that. And you know, it would have saved me money in the Foxhound Run issue. Didn't, you know, I paid for all that. So I mean, from that standpoint, we understand it. However, getting the engineers to do it, because they're putting their whole, they have to put the liability insurance up, and I'm telling you, they're charging us a lot more. Now, the other side of this thing, this ain't just going to be Woodside. You know, for me to absorb $2,000 to $3,000, that's one thing. Go to the north side and see when you're talking about $10,000 to $15,000 or $20,000 lots or whatever, and you start, and it's going to be the same. The engineer has still got the same risk. Whether it's a $10,000 lot or a $15,000 lot or a $100,000 lot. So, you know, I'm telling you, this is going to affect the development of in the city of Aiken. It's going to get more expensive. We accept it. We're just saying that we think there should be some tweaks done to it to be a little bit more reasonable. I still need an answer on that prior to final plat approval on 6.5, though.
Just hadn't gotten that far, Mr. Mayor.
Can I ask one more? May I ask one more question? You put the two figures together that we currently charge and got 125.
Yes, ma'am.
So it's not increasing.
It would not be increasing over and above what we're already charging. The way that we could use it would be increasing. Currently, we have the as passed a few months ago. We have the 2-year warranty. If we have that 125 up front, that does give me an additional 15% on performance, and the then gives us the allowance. You know, again, we don't want to be developers, so I have to assume that that development would be complete. Then it gives us that, that additional funding. It's not two pieces of paper. It's much easier for us to be able to go to a bank and say, here's the piece of paper, write me a check. The letter of credit will also let us do drawdowns, and that's what's very important to us. If I have a $5,000 fix, I can go to the bank and say, here's my invoices, here is proof that we had a $5,000 fix within the 2-year time period, write me a check for $5,000. We currently can't do that. We have to call a bond and work through all of that, do whatever we do with the funding, and then write the developer back a check to make that all work. So the letter of credit will work for us in that respect.
You know, the thing that I don't understand about this, number one is, you know, if we've got a developer that's willing to put up a 100% performance bond, that should cover the cost of that development.
It normally would not. That's why we use the 10% factor. If a developer, for lack of a better term, goes belly up,
yes,
and we have to step in and finish it, then we have to go out and get different bids. Because the original contract is with a developer and a contractor, not with us, we cannot enforce that. What we have seen is when we have to go back and do rebids, especially on our work or work that's partially complete, the price does go up. So the 100% really wouldn't cover us in most cases. Possibly some, but in most cases they wouldn't.
And I'd like to add to that, of course, there's also an inflation factor always in these things. You start off with an estimate to begin with. 2 years later, and goodness knows, and I know these guys both know, with the oil the way it's gone, to go in and do an asphalt job now is a heck of a lot more than it was a couple of years ago. And so we're guarding against the future. We are protecting the taxpayers from having to assume the liability for failed contracts, for failed installations that haven't really followed our specifications to begin with. So I really think it's a fair percentage, and it protects the taxpayers. That's what it's for.
How often has this happened in Aiken?
I have been with the city 20 years, and I have had to call in one bond. Now, we have had some subdivisions. That was on a project. We have had some subdivisions that were not completed, and the developer either went bankrupt, walked away, or whatever. And there are three of those that I can think of. Now, we had to go in on one of those and do some drainage work. The water and sewer was in. The roads were in, but they were not in real good condition. We did end up repaving those sooner. We like to repave at about 15 years. We did have to repave those sooner. But that was an orphan subdivision. Then there are two others that we had to do some drainage work on one. And the third one, so far, we haven't had to do anything on.
Larry, do you know the cost? The first one you gave an example of?
The first one, I don't have the total cost on that. That was Stratford Hall, and we did have to repave those roads, and we did some drainage work down going into the detention pond. And in Springstone, we had to do some drainage work down there, and that was about $250,000 for it. Stratford Hall was is many, many years old. But the developer there would have run beyond the normal warranty period anyway. And the way our ordinances were then, we did not have a handle on it anyway. So
we would have been much better protected with the ordinance we're proposing.
We would have been better protected.
Larry, would the 120 have covered the damages? I assume you're 110 at that point, percent.
At that point, we were 110.
Right.
And
suppose it had been 120 at that point.
The subdivision had been completed as far as the number of homes that were developed. So the infrastructure was in, the roads were in. What we saw happening, though, was were the smaller failures. We had storm drain lines that were not sealed properly into boxes. We had to go in and repair those. Of course, that caused holes in roads, things like that. So I would think the 110 would have covered it, but again, I can't give you a total number because we did have to repave the roads out there.
But at any point, the 120 would have covered it, you think?
I would think so, because we're talking 120 of the total project, not just the roads or the water. It's the total project.
Right.
And let me just make this, as was stated earlier, some of those problems may not have happened if there was a resident engineer or record engineer staying out there and making sure the job was done. That's going to be the really key in the future, is having a person out there full-time making sure the infrastructure is going in properly. And so Stratford Hall, yes, we went in there maybe a little bit early, but we would have accepted the project years before that if that contractor had still been there. The Springstone, I think some of those things would not have occurred if we would have had the engineer out there.
Correct.
Engineer record.
Correct.
And that's the key, what you did last November. Mm-hmm. That's the really important step you made.
Mm-hmm. What that engineer of record does is gives us a full person on each job, which of course we don't have with city, with our staff. It's just well beyond what our finances can support on our engineering. And we had that debate in November, but the engineer of record gives us that person on every job site, and that will make a difference.
Pat, while I share a concern regarding the cost factor with having an engineer record on these jobs, when I look at the fact that you may have an inferior infrastructure, it's worth having the citizens not complain because something wasn't constructed properly, and they're suffering because of improper construction that gives us more phone calls, more staff problems, and everything else as a result of these considerations that come to us. So we've got an inferior product coming to their home. That's, you don't see it often enough that...
I understand what you're saying, Leslie, but, I mean, if I didn't feel that we had enough protection with the new requirements, and really Roger's right, this is all about the engineer of record standing over it and making sure it's done. All I'm saying is, and from a developer standpoint, we've gone from 110 to 125, and I'm just saying, you know, that Larry and I met, and you know, your expert says 120 is a reasonable amount and he can handle it. Now that was performance. The old maintenance was what?
15.
The old maintenance was 15, now it's going to 20. So, and I understand what you're saying, but remember, we put the requirements of the engineer of record on us, and we've increased the requirement. And all I'm saying is, in the day, and really, to be honest with you, it probably is going to affect us more than anybody else. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got Mr. Kisner coming up here in a minute, I guess, and he's probably going to be in favor of it because he's building at Cedar Creek, and they don't, you know, he doesn't have any requirement on engineers of record, and neither does Trolley Run, or neither does all my competition, which is located right around our area. But guess what? Good old Woodside and the north side, if we ever get a subdivision out there, is going to be paying $3,000 or $4,000 more for engineers, and a good old city of Aiken is going to be. So all I'm saying is, as a businessman, I'm up here telling you that I think 120% is reasonable. I know what you're saying, but you got to look at it from the standpoint of the competition that I'm up against that doesn't even do it at all.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying 120%.
120%
plus the engineer of record is sufficient.
Be honest with you.
Cover the job.
Ask him. Because I met with him, I came and I said, we met with the committee, and I really do apologize for not being here before, and I appreciate y'all putting this off, but that's what I did. I went to Larry, I don't want to put word, and I asked Larry. And I feel like it's reasonable that I think we still protect the citizen of Aiken, but the most important thing is what you voted on before. And, you know, I wasn't necessarily in favor of it, but I understood it. Mm-hmm. And I did not fight it because I thought it was the right thing to do. And in the long run, if I'd have had it on Foxhound, it probably would have saved, I didn't even say how much it would have saved me. But that to me is important. And I think that's more important from your standpoint than this.
I'd like to hear anyone that thinks that the 120 with the engineer record is not sufficient. I'd like to understand why it's not sufficient, rather than trying to prove that it is. Mm-hmm. Say, why isn't it, with these changes that we've made, based on the history that we've seen? Why isn't that sufficient? Because I'm leaning that way. So convince me that that's not, you know, sufficient.
Well, we can lean whatever way we want, but I think...
give me some facts. I like facts.
I can live with either one. I'm just sensitive to the fact that our public works director came up with 125% and seemed to have some rationale. Now, it's a tough decision. We can make it 115, we can make it 20, we can make it 125. We have to rely on our staff, and I'm like you, Mayor. My mind could be changed. I just would like to see more rationale, but the staff recommended 125.
Well, as we've discussed already, in my opinion, I think that engineer record is going to make the world of difference. I mean, obviously. And so I'm just wondering why we have to go to 125.
Well, the fact remains that our staff recommended the 125, and then we get the heat from the developers and we immediately start buckling. That's the way I see it.
Larry, did you recommend 125?
We recommended, Ed and I both got together and wrote it at 125.
Is that based on experience and based on the thought of the engineer of record being on the job?
That's what that was based on, what we were trying to do with the 120, and Pat is correct. I did agree with him with the 120, with the engineer of record, is trying to seek a good compromise.
Wait a minute, I'm confused. I thought you said the public works director agreed to 125.
I recommended 125. In negotiations after the first meeting, sitting down with the committee, with the development committee, going over what they were trying to do and what they were giving to us, I felt that we could compromise, we could lower to 120. Mm-hmm. Again, that's at council's beck and call. What did we recommend? 125 is what we recommended.
But you were compromising, right?
What I was trying to do was reach a good compromise that I felt the developers could live with and that we could live with also.
Yeah. You know, there's no way that you can ever be assured that you could go up to 130, you could go up to 140, 150, and then all of a sudden something happens that doesn't even cover it. Mm-hmm. So I just think it sounds like to me, I'm no expert, obviously, but it just seems to me, with again, the engineer of record is a major thing. He's being held responsible. He's out there every day. Is that right, Pat? He's on the job.
He's got to put his...
You're holding him responsible, and he's, of course.
We, the city, are holding the engineer of record responsible to be out there to where he will put his seal and sign those plans that they were done according to city specifications.
Okay. Which we did not have before.
That is correct.
And also, we're increasing here. We're talking about increasing from 110 up to 125%.
No.
Now.
No.
What? No?
Well, yes and no. Let's put it that way. Okay. Because yes, we had a maintenance bond and a performance bond.
Yeah. And together, it's 125.
Together, they added up to 125.
Or 120.
No.
Planning Commission suggested they advised the 125, right? Mm-hmm. I think that was their suggestion. But what? I'm just trying to figure out
find a way to make everybody happy.
While we need, Dick, not exactly. How important do you think this engineer record is?
I think it's a tremendous improvement, and I'm very happy that we got that in. Absolutely. But I still think we have a responsibility to take the original advice without the pressure of our staff and do what they thought was right.
And we've not tested this engineer of record thing. I mean, is it going to be that easy to get that money from that engineer of record? Are we going to need to be going to court? What's going to be happening here?
The money does not come from the engineer of record. It actually comes from the developer. Mm-hmm. Through a letter of credit through his bank.
The same thing.
The engineer of record has to provide us with the signed and sealed assurance that the project was done properly. That's where he is just very key. As I said a while ago, that person is on the job essentially for the city of Aiken, but being paid for by the developer.
Okay. And Larry, explain just a moment. And if something goes wrong, you've got that certification that everything was done properly.
Correct.
What happens?
If something did go wrong with our certification, and let's use the, for instance, that you know we are well beyond where the funding would take us, that you know we have a problem there, then we could come back against the engineer of record and start looking for design flaws, for one thing, installation flaws. He is out there saying it's done properly. If the plans were done properly and prepared properly and it was installed properly, there should be no failure. So that's the person then that we would come back against. You know, if we did not have enough funding, it may end up in court. I don't know. But we would come back against their error and omissions insurance. That's what Pat was mentioning a while ago, that the engineers of records are saying our insurance is on the line, therefore we want, I think, Pat, you said $3,000 a lot? Roughly $3,000 a lot, because their insurance is on the line. So that would cover... And it, you know, this was part of the thought process during this meeting that I had with them. You know, that would cover anything additional that, you know, the difference between the 20 and the 25%, But again, would we get that easily? No, we may have to take them to court to get it and prove that there were problems there. Have any been done that way, Ms. Fodders? No. We currently have two sections of Woodside that are getting ready to start. I think we may even have had a pre-construction conference on one of them already, and they will be our first engineer of record projects. Everything that's being done right now is being wrapped up, started, well underway prior to the November meeting where we pass the engineer of record requirement.
I would want to point out, Mayor, that this has gone through the Planning Commission, which recommended the 125. It came here where we approved the 125, and then for whatever reason at that time the developer, we had no input, no discussion at that time between the 125 and 120. I'd almost wish the staff wouldn't bring these things to us without concurrence from the development community, because their input is essential from the get-go, and it wasn't available to us. But we're upholding the Planning Commission recommendation of 125 and Larry's recommendation, which is what weighs on my mind.
I think one thing that was mentioned here was the fact that outside the city limits, there is nothing like this. Is that correct?
That is correct to my knowledge. I do not know if the county is looking at what we're doing to do anything in a parallel form or not.
I think this may be a small piece of the pie, but I think it's one that we need to consider. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is go across the street and build a house. You don't have the competition that all of our builders here. We're talking with Pat tonight, but I mean, it affects everybody in the city limits. And I think that ought to be considered, but I don't think that's the major thing. To me, the major thing is the engineer record. And then you argue about whether or not it's 120 or 125. Let's split the difference. Let's go 122 and a half. Go to the next item on the agenda.
There's another question Mr. Cunning did have of us. I probably need to address for council before we move on to that point, Mr. Mayor, if I may.
Sir.
In section 6.5, dedication of improvements, we have historically gone ahead and issued building permits to a developer once the water system was in the ground, it had been chlorinated, we knew it was safe. DHEC had either given us a piece of paper saying, yes, it's safe, use it, or they'd given us a phone call, yes, it's safe, use it. We've allowed the homes to progress then under building. We would not issue a CO on those homes until the road was complete, the sewer was complete, everything was done. So what we're looking at right here, based on what DHEC has told us, as Mr. LeDuc said a while ago, we're looking at accepting the utilities as soon as they are completed. Now, that would mean essentially the building permit will come at exactly the same time as it always has, because we will have the bond, the letter of credit in hand for the performance and maintenance of the facilities. With that letter of credit in hand, they can get a final plat working and start selling lots, advertising, etc., so that they can build. The sentence prior to final plat approval, an offer of dedication must be submitted in form provided by the city engineer, may only be accepted through the city through enactment. That offer of dedication refers to the utilities. We can approve a final plat prior to the streets going in, and we have done that historically. Council has accepted those historically. So that's not an issue for us. The reason this language is here is going back to what Mr. Smith and I were talking about a while ago, the three subdivisions that were orphaned, if you will. Had we had that offer of dedication in hand, we could have exercised that offer of dedication at a much earlier time. Stratford Hall is an excellent example. We could have exercised the offer of dedication and then not had the issue of, well, the contractor needs to fix it or the developer, and we have that back and forth for years with them, and finally they disappeared. So having that offer of dedication before us gives us a little bit more, shall we say, strength in our tool chest to be able to say, okay, here it is, now let's make sure that we protect our citizens. So that's why that language is in there. We would not hold up building permits until all of this is through. We don't hold them up now, and we are not planning on holding them up then.
But this whole thing is guaranteeing to a person that buys a home in the city of Aiken that if their subdivision goes belly up, they're not going to lose. Their streets are going to be finished. Their infrastructure is going to be finished.
That is correct. That's what the bond.
And they won't lose a major part of their investment.
That's correct. Now, again, we don't want to be developers. If it's a 100-acre subdivision and they're developing one 10-acre part of it,
well,
that's what
different.
Our bond is for, that's all we're going to complete. We're not going to go after 90 more acres.
No, because we don't do that. We don't start out with that.
Exactly. We start out with the 10 acres.
Are you saying that prior to plat approval, an offer of dedication improvements must be submitted, and further on, as-built of all improvements in a digital form except for the city must be done before a final plat is approved? Is that correct? If you follow the letter of this, there's no sense in doing a performance guarantee because you can't deed without a final plat. So that was my question. In other words, prior to final plat approval, an offer of dedication improvements must be submitted to the engineer. The resolution must state the city shall record a dedication to provide all necessary parties with notice prior to consideration of dedication as built of all improvements. As built, you know, is everything that's got to be in. So that's what I really came up here for. I mean, the 120 and 125 and the rest of it. But that one sentence, as far as it says, that says a final plat, you have to have everything in. The performance, if you want that to be that way, you go right back to the way it was before, Roger, that nobody can get anything, a building permit, before everything is in. That's the way I read that. And I know that y'all think that it's all about the developers, but believe me, I've got a lot of homeowners that want to buy a lot and want to get started building. And what this says is, not until everything's in, yeah, you. What I'm saying is, that's the way I read it, Larry.
Yeah, it's not the way.
Well, a final, if it passes, then you've got people on your staff that might read it that way.
You need her lawyer.
What I'm looking at is the 6.5, the final lower section of it. Prior to consideration of the dedication by City Council, as-built of all improvements in a digital form acceptable to the city engineer shall be submitted. These improvements set forth in the dedication agreement not accepted until Council accepts them by majority vote in a public meeting. I think I'm reading that a little different than Mr. Cunning. What we're saying is get us an offer of dedication so you can get a final plat going. But prior to consideration of that dedication, in other words, prior to us taking everything, we want those digital as-built. We want to know where the road is. We want to know where the sewers are. Now, does that mean that we would not give him a final plat? No. All it says for final plat approval is to give us the offer of dedication. It doesn't say we have to pass on it then.
Can we word this differently then so that we all understand it?
Mr. Mayor, if I may, my recollection, Larry, is this was put in because the developers wanted us to be able to accept dedication before the one-year period had passed.
That is correct.
They wanted us to accept dedication when it was time for final plat approval, and that's why we put this language in here.
Right. And this gives us that authority to be able to do a final plat approval because all we have to have in our hands is an offer of the dedication. We can do the final plat approval. We've got the letter of credit in hand. They can be building. But before we're going to accept that dedication, what we're saying is we want those as-builts. Now, they can get us as-builts very quickly of the water and sewer, and this kind of flies a little bit against DHEC. But DHEC themselves want to know where the valves are and where the manholes are and everything. So it's in their best interest to have these as-built also.
Larry, why is prior to final plat approval? Final plat approval is what you need to be.
It's just an offer. That's all you're
but then,
offer.
Right before, prior to final plat approval, comma, an offer of dedication.
That's just an offer. That is you're getting the deed of dedication ready, you're getting it into the city council saying, here it is. That's all it is. It doesn't say that it has to be passed by council before you can get your final plat approved. Unless I'm misreading that, Mr. Smith.
I'm going to check with my attorney here. It says, prior to final plat approval, I have to have the as-built done. If somebody tells me that's all right, I'm fine. But if I read that, I'd say I got to have the as-built in. I got to have it done. If the final plat approval was not there, one of the problems we had was that the water and sewer was inspected by DHEC and by the city of Aiken. Okay. DHEC approved it. City inspected it. I have lots out there 4 years, and we're still trying to get. And there's some problems as far as the roads and all that. As far as some things that the city's still over, but as far as the water and sewer was approved by DHEC, inspected by the city. A water line broke. It's been in for 5 years. 200 homes out there. The city came out, looked at it, said, "Sorry, it's not us." Call the developer. My men came out there to fix the city water line that, I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure that I'm supposed to do that. It's a water line that's been out there for 5 years. Water line broke. City turned around and left, said, "We're not fixing it." The homeowner, you know, that didn't help the homeowner. I got it fixed. I got my contractor out there the next day. But I'm fixing a water line that's been out there for, and it had been inspected and approved by DHEC. That's the reason why we wanted to have that.
I'm going to rely on Larry, too, because Larry's been instrumental in putting this language together. But my interpretation of those last few sentences is before Larry and Ed can give you final plat approval for your subdivision, you've got to submit an offer of dedication.
Correct.
Okay. That doesn't mean it's accepted. But you've at least got to come to the city with a proposal, "I'm going to dedicate this," once the city decides it's acceptable to the city. Now, before, and final plat approval can occur before dedication is accepted, but before we will accept the offer of dedication, you've got to come to Larry with the as-builts and all that other information that the city council needs for them to be able to accept the dedication.
As long as we're just
correct
talking about the water and sewer as-builts, I would agree with that. Is that what that means?
That in the case of Woodside, it's water and sewer because roads are private, but that is for all improvements. And the as-builts, in referring to the one Mr. Cunning is referring about, we did not have as-builts on that, and that had never been dedicated. Yes, it had been out there about 5 years. We've been in contact with his staff, even as late as today, working. As y'all remember, we've brought several Woodside sections to you that were ready that we finally got as-builts on and had those through. There are a few sections left that we still don't even have as-builts on. To have something out there for 4 or 5 years of that as-built makes it a little tough to find valves and manholes and things like that. And that's what we need to be able to do this. We have got to have those.
What's inspected, though, right?
Inspection and as-built are two different things.
No, I moved it.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
But
you've heard enough, so.
Yeah. So I think that
6.5 needs clarification. In other words, we can't leave that as it is based on the discussion, the interchange we just had.
Gary says
we think it's clear.
Oh, really?
The problem is we've worked on this language. I mean, this one paragraph has caused a lot of work, city employees and lawyers and everything else. And I'm comfortable with what the language is saying. We won't. The reason we're doing this is Larry wants the assurance that the improvements are going to be dedicated to the city before we give final plat approval, so they can start selling lots. And this language says that they will do that. But then Larry recognizes before he can come to you guys with a true offer of dedication that you need more information than what he needs to give final plat approval.
Correct.
And that's why he wants the as-built at that point, so we know exactly what we're going to be saying the city now owns. So that's why it's worded the way it is, and I think it's, to me, it's, you know, maybe that's why I went to law school, but to me it's clear that it's worded that way.
Yeah. Well, I want to make sure that Pat and whoever else understands this and that they can say, okay, it's clear to me also. Until we do, we're not communicating properly.
Right.
May I suggest something which to me says the same thing, Pat, but instead of prior, if we put in order to obtain final plat approval, you got to do these and this. Is that?
Okay. Remember when I started that we will usually, with HUD approval, we'll start selling lots, okay? Mm-hmm. In order to get this final plat approval, then I have to have the as-built. That's what I was concerned about, Gary, is the fact that in order to get as long as I can submit a final plat approval and be able to deed, I'll put the bond up and I'll do the rest of it. What I was concerned about was that I had, in order to get the final plat approval, I had to have the as-built on the water and sewer. That was the confusion. And if I can do that, I'm fine.
Do you understand? You all communicating? You understanding?
I think we're okay, but I'd like to make sure that you give me a letter that we can operate like we've been doing as far as submitting the plat. But when I read it, it is confusing when you see to get a final plat approval, which is what I need to deed from. And but as long as I can do what I've been doing, then I'm fine. As long as you give me assurances of that.
Okay. Is that okay, Larry? I mean, you understand?
That's no problem, Mayor. As I stated a while ago, we are not changing how we're issuing building permits, making his final record plat so it can be approved. What this is merely an offer of dedication. Once we get an offer, we get a letter from Woodside, whoever, Steve Kisner, whatever builders out there, saying we are now offering to dedicate these improvements. That's my offer.
Right.
We can come at that point and say final plat approval. That's a done deal. Now, notice I haven't come to council yet and said, let's dedicate these. When they get through with their infrastructure and I get as-built, then I will come to council. I will have the offer that I may have been sitting on for 6 months to a year. It's just an offer. They've been building houses. No change. And I will have the as-built to be able to lay in front of you and say, this is what we're accepting. And I will have the engineer of record certificate saying it's done properly.
How often do you see the as-built actually vary from the final plat approval?
As long as there's no change in the lots, very minor changes, you know, maybe 10 or 15 feet on a sewer or a water line or something, but nothing major. Yeah. Where there's a change in the lots, and Mr. Cunning alluded to that a while ago, he had to move to get some lots workable. He had to move a 16-inch force main, and that was a major, major thing that, you know, we had to go back on as-builts for.
Okay. Okay. Would anyone else like to speak? Okay.
I'm Jack Beckham, 188 Governor Lane, and I'm a contractor developer. I've never done anything in Aiken, the city of Aiken, but I have done something in county. And I think we've got a cart before the horse here. I've heard all the positives, all the negatives about the contractor, about the city side, and everybody's interested in protecting the city, which I agree with. As a taxpayer, I'd like to have my taxpayer money looked after. But the first thing you should remember is the tax money that you get comes from most of the houses that have been built here. So you've got a positive on one side and a negative on the other, and you have to weigh that negative against the positive. Let me give you a good example of the problem we have to put up with. When we build a subdivision, and before we can get the as-built and get our final plat, and this is true for the county as well as I'm sure it's true for the city, it's kind of held as blackmail, you might say, kind of hold it back until you get everything done. And I've always encouraged the county. I went before the county council and tried to explain this to them. I don't think they ever got it. But when you got 50 lots out here that are finished, the quicker you get that plat, the quicker they go on record, and the quicker the county starts getting money. But they don't understand that. They'd rather hold somebody hostage for maybe a little road not quite finished here or a drain not cleaned out, which might go on 6 months. And in the meantime, they could be getting a couple hundred dollars for the lots that I build, maybe $250 a lot for 50 lots. That's a lot of money. You do that 10 times over the county, that's a lot of money. Same thing here in the city. We went about the liability of the city, maybe a main blowing out or something, that might cost a couple $1,000s. But at the same time, if you go ahead and approve the plat, you've got more than that coming in. And I don't think most people I hate to say this because I'm always criticizing politicians, but sometimes politicians don't ever look at the business side of it. They're looking at one side of the issue. And all the money that comes in, the revenue for the city, comes from basically small businesses and homeowners. And I'm surprised at how much money that is. And I just think about the houses that I built over my career. If I'd have got $100 a house that right now for all those houses, I'd be pretty well off. And then the city is getting, and the county is getting thousands of dollars. And you take a place like Woodside, you can't tell me that those houses don't pay for themselves, because most of those people come in here don't have kids. They have very few expenses. So instead of putting up something like this to try to protect the city, you should be trying to foster building. Now, these people up here just a minute ago, they're not going to worry about whether it's 120 or 115%, but what about these small developers? It makes a big difference. We need to be encouraging development. I saw something on the internet the other night. The state is coming out with this program, affordable housing. And when I saw the word affordable housing, I couldn't help but laugh. Politicians don't have a clue what affordable means. By doing this subdivision, by adding these costs you're doing right here, it's not going to affect these people. When you got a $100,000 lot, what's another $3,000 or $4,000? But when you got a $10,000 lot, that might decide whether you're going to do your subdivision or not. Mm-hmm. I just don't understand why government can't help business instead of always fighting them. Seems like they try to throw up blockade, and all the money comes from business. Let me give you another example. When I build a house in a subdivision, I don't get taxed at 4%. I get taxed at 6%. When a homeowner comes in and buys a house, it's automatically reduced. If he goes to gets his homestead, he goes to 4%. So all the time my house is sitting out there not sold, I'm paying 6%. No kids going to school, basically no fire protection. I mean, we have a private type fire protection out there, but I mean, it's the same thing. We're creating money. We're creating tax money, and then we have to fight our way through all this stuff. It's just, I've been developing subdivision for 20 years, and I don't ever remember having anything to do in a subdivision to go, and I'm sure they do, sometimes pipes blow out and all kinds of stuff, but I don't remember. Oh, I can count the times on one hand that I've had to go back and redo something. It just doesn't happen. I mean, it happens every once in a while. But you can't set policy to take care of everything. That's like getting an insurance policy to take care of everything could ever go wrong with you. You'd have to pay a fortune. You can't do it. And I think we're going to have to get a happy medium in here to keep business going, keep tax money coming, without putting everybody out of business, just to protect the city.
Okay, that's exactly what we're trying to do here. That's why we're spending all the time talking about this, and we've spent many, many times talking about it. I think our council has been pro-business for years and years and years, and that's what we continue to be. And that's why we've taken so much time to talk about this. So I appreciate what you say, but I think we're trying to do exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, but when you look,
we're growing. We've been growing every year. We're one of the stars in South Carolina as far as the city, and I think it's because we all try to work together, which we do. And I think most everybody would agree we work together.
I hope you do.
Now we've also at the same time we've got to protect our citizens. But we've also got to protect our developers. We don't want everybody moving and building just across the line in the county and losing business when we could have that business. So that's what concerns me as well. And we want it to look nice, the landscaping and what have you. Every time I go by that Hobby Lobby, you know, it's terrible out there. They chose to be in the county. So you don't see any landscaping. You don't see anything that looks nice out there. But you've got landscaping on each side of it, and the buildings on each side of it. Looks like. I would prefer that not happening. So I think we've got to be very careful, you know, the limitations or the costs or whatever you have, you want to describe it, that we do put on buildings. So I agree with you on that. I think we all agree. But I think that's what we're trying to do, too.
Well, I know I build mostly in the county, and I found the county to be very fair. In my development, everything I've done in the county, I've been very happy with. I try to do what's right, and they try to do what's right. And I don't see us having any problem. I think that's one reason the county has done so well.
Yeah. But when you look at our impact fees and all the kinds of things like that, and compare them with cities, other cities we are comparable to, we're low compared to them. Okay. Who else would like to speak? Yes, sir.
No, I don't have anything to say. Okay. I'm Reggie Ebner, 165 Foxhound Run. I've followed this through the Planning Commission and for the last number of months. The key thing I have, and Pat has brought it up a number of times in those meetings as well as others, and I'm speaking as a citizen, and wherever it is right now, if a sewer line or a water line needs repair, and let's just pick a house, you can pick it in Woodside or a house fixing to come up in Jim Lakes, who's going to fix that water line as of today? Tomorrow, once this is approved in a new edition, the city has to take that over as soon as it's attested and approved, according to the DHEC letter. But if somebody living on Grassy Creek Knoll calls in and says, I got a water leak in the middle of the road, who's going to fix that today? And they just moved in about 2 months ago. Who fixes that road? And I need either Larry to answer that or Pat. And these are real cases happening, right, Pat?
And you were saying before the city accepts it.
Yeah. And that's a problem now because we have a miles of roads out there right now that have basically been finished in the last year to year and a half, and we're all 6 months to a year from the city accepting the sewer lines and water lines. So we're in that area, and I'm supporting what Pat said. We're paying our taxes for the city to fix it, but yet Pat has to fix them. And somebody's going to cut one with a backhoe or do something. I mean, that happens. So we've got another, almost a year, Pat, before all of the rest of these lines are done. And we're talking 10 or 12 miles of roads.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the answer to that question then? Anybody have an answer?
Let Larry answer that since he's going to be one that's going to be dealing with it.
I'm speaking as a citizen, and the money I won't deal with.
Well, sure. I mean, we're interested in our citizens. We're citizens, too.
Yes, Mayor, I'm Steve Kisner, Summit Drive. I've had the privilege to serve on the DHEC board for the last 6 years. And honestly, as a citizen vacant, I had no idea the way we were operating in the past. But I can assure you that it's state law that once that toilet is flushed, then it's the city's responsibility to repair and maintain the system. It's state law.
If it's in the city.
If it's in the city, and you allow a building permit to go on, and you allow a citizen to move in and use the water and sewer systems, then it's the city's responsibility to maintain it. And that really doesn't affect anything we're talking about here tonight, because the right. developer is putting up a maintenance guarantee. If there is a failure within 2 years, right. well, actually, it's longer than that. If the entire subdivision is not finished, it could be up to 4 years. The developer is going to pay you to fix it, but your guy has got to go out there and fix it. And that's only fair. You're collecting the fees. The citizens are paying the taxes, mm-hmm. and they expect you to, I mean, you're the entity that they expect to maintain it, yes. and that's the way it should be, mm-hmm. okay?
I think we all agree with that.
Okay.
Yeah, very, very simply put.
Thank you, Steve.
But I don't think that's happening in, and I'll use Woodside in other areas, I don't think what he said is happening. I think if there's a water or sewer problem out there, we call Pat, because I've known myself has been one of them that's called within the last year with a water leak, and the city came out and said, nope, that still belongs to the developer, which is true. But I'm from the school, having done construction my whole career and worked with DHEC. Once there's water in the line and once there's sewer flowing, it becomes a regulated waste or a regulated supply. And so I'm looking at, for the next 6 months to a year, who's going to fix the water leaks and the sewer leaks in Woodside or the rest of the city?
Okay. All right. Maybe Larry can answer that.
Under our current system, what they're saying is correct. We would have put that to the developer. I would have to disagree with Mr. Kisner. Passing this is critical to us. We do want that, because this then gives me the authority to go out and start fixing those water leaks. If this is passed tonight, we can go out and fix them tomorrow. And part of that is that we know that we can get the as-builts. We now have a method to go out and do this. Okay? We don't have that method right now. Right now, the way our ordinances are, is that until dedication is complete, we don't have any authority over them. We don't have anything to do with them. Right, wrong, or indifferent, that's the way the city has traditionally done it. We are changing that right now with this ordinance, so that we would have, you know, we would have that authority to be able to do that. Pat has alluded to the lines, and so has Reggie, that have not been dedicated in Woodside. Even as of today, we've been in contact with Russell, and I forgot his last name, but Russell, who is on Mr. Hunting's staff, and I think there are only four sections out there that will not be coming to you very, very shortly. Our city engineer, Ted Jones, was in communication with Mr. Pierce and said, let's go ahead with the dedications, and gave him a list of all of the ones, because we have been working diligently because of this problem to get those dedicated under our current system. There are about three or four that we don't have as-builts, and there are some problems with them. And there's no way I can bring those to you for dedication until we get that. They are under our old system. Now, if this is passed tonight, I'll go fix the leaks, or I'll go take care of the problems. But again, we need to make certain that we get those as-builts, and that's part of what we're trying to do tonight.
Okay.
And I would, there was a comment made a while ago that, you know, why even worry about that? I have one set of as-builts that we just pulled Friday. We have a customer that wants to get on sewer, and they're having problems with a septic tank. This is in a section of the city that actually does have some septic tanks left in it. And according to the as-builts that I have, which were signed by the contractor, which is the way we used to do them, there's a sewer line right there next to this property. It's not there. Those as-builts are false. And that's why the engineer of record was passed in November. And we will see that not happening anymore. So that's why they're so important to us.
Okay. Thank you, Larry. Thanks. Anyone else like to speak? If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I just have one thought and a question that goes along with that thought, and that is that Pat mentioned his concern for projects other than in Woodside where they could probably afford to do all of this. And my concern is, how does this affect projects that we know are coming up on the north side where the developments are smaller and maybe not as well-financed? How does this affect those contractors that are building in those other areas? Does anyone see that as a problem going up to 125%?
Well, I think it is a concern. Again, when you balance the two, outside, what's outside the city, what's inside the city?
Right, right.
And,
I mean, you know,
now the advantages of being in the city, so some of that is taken into consideration. I'm sure when people build a house, some of them want to be in the city, even, you know, and we'll pay more money, obviously, for the public safety and services that we offer. But I don't think any of us want to really put much a whole lot of damper on our builders, our contractors, such that a restriction, such that it does force people, if you will, or it makes it very attractive for them to stay just right outside of the city. Because what happens, we end up getting all the traffic, we get everything from them, and no taxes, no advantage, you know, to speak of. They come in, use our roads, use our facilities, and so that's something that I think about all the time, and that's we just need that happy balance, mm-hmm. and it's hard to find out exactly where that balance is sometimes.
Well, that was a compromise.
Here about 120% or 125%, and how much difference that makes, I don't know.
Well, Larry mentioned a compromise of 120%, and I don't know at what point or how long that was considered, but
we're also in a down market, and who knows how long we're going to be in a down market.
It's a dilemma, because we do have to wait, you know, for someone that's building buying a less expensive house, the chances are, too, that that's going to be a much bigger part of their investment potential than it is for other people. Yeah. And so it is a careful balance, because we don't want them, to have to install a sewer line like he was talking about would be devastating in some situations.
Right.
So we do want them protected.
Yeah.
I think we've had some very good discussion regarding this amendment to the land development, and Jet, you brought out some very good concerns, and I thank you for that, and Pat. And while we want to protect our citizens, there has to be a balance in terms of how we look at this, and Jane, your point well taken as well in terms of the 125 versus the 120. Then I think what gives us strength is the engineer of record that we didn't have before. That's an added protection that makes the city, I think, feel comfortable, as well as myself personally with this. I want to make a motion if there's...
Okay. Sure. Go ahead.
The motion is to amend the land development regulations regarding maintenance guarantees to 120%.
I'll second it. Any other discussion?
And just to amend it, or are you asking that you approve it then or not?
We approve it.
Approve it.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I approve it with that change. So, any other discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor. Okay. Opposed. Passes 5-2. Okay. Thank you all for being those here that spoke. Thank you very much. Thank you for what you do for our city. Okay. Item 2 is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to annex property at 501 Douglas Drive. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'm going to read this by title only. It's an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the City of Aiken certain property consisting of 0.36 acres of land owned by Cotillia Construction and located 501 Douglas Drive and zoned the same residential single-family RS-10. This is just a regular annexation of a new piece of property that Harold Rayner built, and they are coming to the city asking for city services at the appropriate time. This is the second reading public hearing of an ordinance to annex property at 501 Douglas Drive under the Hours 10 zone.
Thank you, sir. This is the second reading public hearing of this ordinance to annex this property at 501 Douglas. And if anyone would like to speak on this issue, you certainly may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, go ahead.
Yes, sir?
I move for approval of this annexation on second reading.
Second.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Old business, still an old business. Item 1, 2, 4. Did I miss 3?
No, it's not on here.
Okay, we're going to go to 4 because there isn't a 3. Second reading public hearing of an ordinance to amend section 22-4 of the city code concerning discharging firearms. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Again, I'm going to read this by title only. It's an ordinance revising chapter 22 of the Aiken City Code to amend section 22-4 regarding discharging firearms or other weapons within the city limits. We have an ordinance that says you cannot discharge firearms in the city. The state law did change, though. It says that it gives the landowners the right with 25 acres or more to be able to protect themselves, the families, employees, from animals or other threats. And so we need to amend our ordinance to fit in with the state law that has been adopted this past year. So for your consideration tonight, this is second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to allow the discharge of firearms to city limits for landowners who own 25 acres or more.
Thank you, sir. This is the second reading public hearing of this ordinance to amend the section. If there's anyone in the audience that would like to speak on this, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration. Do we have a motion or a second? And second.
So moved.
Okay. So I'll second it. Any discussion? This is a state law, is it?
Yes, it is.
And cities cannot change them, right? Where they can't make it any.
We can't. They're a higher.
I mean, if you wanted to.
They're a higher authority than we are.
Right.
And actually, what happens is the ordinance that you have on the books now would be completely unenforceable. And so, by doing it this way, you actually have an enforceable ordinance that complies with state law. If you don't comply with state law,
right,
and Pete goes to arrest somebody for discharging a weapon in the city, mm-hmm, even somebody that doesn't qualify for the state protection,
right,
would be able to do it.
Yeah.
And so that's why you have to pass the ordinance.
You know, not to belabor it, but remember we talked about it when it came up on first reading. You could be standing there 2 or 3 feet inside your 25 acres, but yet so close to somebody else's house and shoot something running across. And oh, well. Is there any discussion on this?
You can only shoot in the middle of your property.
Yeah, that's what I would say. Somewhere in the middle. Okay, a show of hands, please. All in favor? You pass this unanimously. Item 5, second reading public hearing of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance to create a planned institutional zone. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance amending the zoning ordinance to create the planned institutional zone, which council has talked about for some time. We had some discussion with the BZA at a meeting several months ago. We've made some modification. And so essentially what we're saying is that anytime an annexation would come before or come to the Planning Commission, they will now have a zone called Planned Institution that they can annex this property under for churches, schools, libraries, nonprofits, social services, etc. Now, within the city, if somebody wants to put a institution, like I mentioned, one of these schools or nonprofits, and it's not zoned properly, they need to go ahead and go through the same procedure anybody would for rezoning, but they also need to get a BZA special exception. And that's what BZA wanted was. We still feel that anything within the city
should come before us, plus go to City Council. So this is the best of both worlds, staying the way we are, inside the city if you want to go to a PI zone. Outside the city, though, there will be a zone created, or the ability to create this zone called Planned Institutional Zone. You'll be having coming up right after this, if you approve this, a resolution which would require anybody wanting one of these types of institutions that they have to annex under the PI zone. Otherwise, they could just come in and say, we really don't want that. We want to do something different. So it's setting a policy for the city to go forward. So before you tonight, this is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to adopt a new planned institutional zone under our zoning ordinance.
Thank you, sir. It's the second reading public hearing of this ordinance. And anyone in the audience want to speak on this, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I approve, recommend that we approve this, move that we approve this zoning ordinance.
Okay.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Second, okay.
I do have a question, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, discussion.
I remember a few years ago, there was a piece of property near the farmer's market, across the street from the farmer's market, and there was this office building, and a church went in there. And there are other small pieces of property around town where houses have been turned into churches. So how does this affect that for the future? In the future, does it mean that if anybody wants to turn a piece of property into a church, they have to come before and have that rezone? Is that what we're saying?
No, this doesn't change a thing as to how people want to rezone the property. They still have to go through the BZA and City Council for that. Mm-hmm. This is only for property outside the city that's going to be annexed into the city. We're creating a zone or some vehicle for those individuals to come into the city instead of having a general business with a school being allowed there. We'll actually have a zone called Planned Institution. If they want to change something inside the city, then they still have to go through the same procedures they had to before.
Okay.
Now, you asked, what are those procedures?
I think I know what they are.
Okay.
But I just wanted to make sure that none of that's changing.
None of that has changed.
Okay.
Okay, anything else? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 6, approval of a resolution setting council policy regarding requests for annexation of planned institutional property.
Again, this is setting a policy that the planning staff will be able to use as these requests come forward to tell those intending to put in those churches, schools, libraries, social service agencies that they have to annex under the planned institutional zone. So for your consideration tonight, this is approval resolution by City Council regarding annexation of planned institutional property.
Okay. Do we have a motion and a second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor. This is approved.
Okay. Discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 7, second reading, public hearing, and ordinance to amend the towing ordinance. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. And again, I'm going to read this by title only. It's an ordinance modifying ordinance 09-08-2003 and 06-13-2005 that established involuntary towing procedures for certain vehicles in the city limits and granting franchises to perform the service to update fees that can be charged. Nothing in the ordinance is changing other than the fact that it's been several years, five to be exact, that this ordinance was written. As everybody knows, the price of fuel and everything else has gone up. We checked with other agencies, and they feel that the 125 and 160 and the 20 and 25 for storage is a reasonable amount, and therefore we are recommending to you tonight on second reading that we would change for those involuntary tows these changes that are in the attached ordinance.
Okay, thank you. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance. If anyone would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we modify
towing ordinance and adopt this ordinance on second reading and public hearing.
Okay, I'll second it. Any discussion?
I just wanted to know how much the increase was. Let me.
How much it is increasing?
For nights.
I think it's going from $85 to that 120, and then the 125
and 160. Mr. Mayor, I did not support this on first reading, and my reason for that is when I read this the first time, I just thought, considering the fact that the things are so tough and a lot of people are driving older cars and they're breaking down more often, and I just felt like going up that much was going to be a hardship on some individuals, and so I just wanted to share my thoughts with you as to why I did not support it the first time. And it would be my my pleasure, I guess, to vote likewise this time.
And again, this is for those that do not know who to call up for a tow. If your brake broke down and you need a tow, it has nothing to do with it. It'd be something from out of town. So it's like, who do I call? And they say, well, we have a list here. We just rotate down that list. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to go ahead and use any of these towing services.
Right. Now, now you're saying the cost increase here doesn't apply to some?
No. All I'm saying is if you want to use a certain person to tow your vehicle, then you free to go ahead and call them up, and if you get them to charge something different, that's between you and them. This is, if someone's on the towing list, this is the price that they're going to charge to go out there and make that tow.
Okay. So it is possible then to get a lower price if you know a towing company and you can talk to them about it.
Sure.
Is there a time frame involved? In other words, if somebody's broken down, do they have a certain time frame to get that car off a main road, for example?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me make sure you understand what this is. Let's say you're driving down the bypass and your car breaks down. You can call anyone you want. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is mostly used. Let's say we get a DUI at nighttime. They're so inebriated they don't know who to call. Well, then we'll call somebody, and that's the fees they're charging. Or if somebody, let's say somebody has a wreck and they're unconscious and have to go to the hospital, we have to get the cars moved, so we'll call the next one on the rotation list.
Yeah, my question. But if somebody breaks down on the bypass, good example, can they say, I'll get my car tomorrow if it's...
If it's on the roadway, no. Like if they break down, if they're in the middle of the road.
They're off to the side.
They're on this. It depends if it's a hazard. You know, sometimes it depends on the time of the day, the weather conditions.
Okay.
Most cases, if it's not going to be a hazard, you know, we give them hours to get it off the roadway, as long as they can get it far off the road. But if it's, you know, weather conditions, they can't get it off the roadway. You know, if it's a traffic hazard, you know, we give them, you know, within 45 minutes anyway.
And then how do we make sure at the Municipal Association, I don't know if you remember, but there was a mayor of a small town whose son got stopped and had a vehicle problem with this towing thing and ended up having to pay $600 that she was going to address. How do we make sure that these are what they charge?
Can I give you an example? My son, who transferred to Savannah State, was driving his Camry back from Savannah State. The car broke down, he and a friend, and he called his father and said, I'm stuck on the highway, the car won't start. We went to this place on Highway 19, got one of those towing thing, $40, went down and got his car and brought it home.
And we would
but the highway patrol had stopped. He was waiting out there for about four or five hours for us.
Yeah.
But he stopped him several times.
Yeah, we'd allow the same thing as long as it's not a hazard that somebody's going to hit you.
But
give people hours.
But I mean, my question was, how do we make sure that that's what's charged?
do the tow operators agree that this is what they're going to charge?
Right, they actually have a contract.
If they want to be on the city's list, they'll charge this. If they don't charge this, they'll take them off the list.
Right. Thank you. And they don't have to be on a list. It's a voluntary list. If they don't want to agree to this, they don't have to be on our list.
What percentage would you say are not on the list?
20? All of them are on the list.
All of them
they want to be
on the list that
list.
You know of. Huh?
Yep. Okay. But at any given time, they can get off if they don't agree with this. They
want
to
be called
on.
They want to be in that rotation.
They won't be in that rotation.
They get a call at least every so often.
Right.
My son hit a deer, and had to have the car towed. And I think two came. He didn't call anybody. Two came. He called from the cell phone in the car.
And two tow trucks came?
Two trucks came. And I don't know whether they were just passing by or heard
of. In that case, this wouldn't apply. You can pick whoever you want.
Right. And I told him to negotiate his fee before he let anybody tow him in and then let him come on in. You know, but I am concerned that that we get them off the streets,
But this is mostly used in those cases, a wreck, you go to the hospital, so we have to make the decision, or to go to a list, or like a DUI, and they don't even know where they are, so we go to the rotation list.
Okay, we've got a motion and second. Any other discussion? If not, show hands, please, all in favor. Opposed? Okay, passes 6-1. Under new business, deed of dedication for Beaver Creek number two.
Yes, sir. This is a deed of dedication of Beaver Creek. It's off of Glenwood Drive. There's 32 residential lots out there. They installed these infrastructure several years ago, and so they're now asking that we go ahead and accept it. Before you take a vote on this, I just wanted to echo what Larry and everybody else was saying earlier. We do have some catching up to do. We are behind in the water and sewer lines, and we felt confined in being able to just say we want to take these things over without your approval. Now that you've given that approval over the next several weeks and months, we could go ahead and make sure that we have the proper paperwork to go ahead and start doing the necessary maintenance and repairs of those lines. And so it's the responsibility is now in our laps. And so I just wanted to say that. But 49th then is the deed of dedication at Beaver Creek 2, Phase 1 for the water utility lines.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
May I ask a question first?
Sure. Beaver you can Creek. Wait till we have a motion and a second.
It's outside the city. It's outside the city.
Yeah. Okay. I move that we approve this. Okay. Then I'll ask the question.
All right, I second it. All right, now.
Now, it is, yes, outside of the city, but we will actually accept facilities outside of the city and do the maintenance on them.
Absolutely, because they're in our water system.
Okay. Yeah, they're paying for that water.
We have hundreds of miles of water and sewer lines outside the city that are in our system that we maintain. And they're paying a monthly fee within their water bill for that maintenance.
And they're paying double the
Mm-hmm. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Passage announced. Item 2, approval of a resolution of deed of dedication for Crepe Myrtle Drive. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. This is another one. This is at the Center South Business Park. Crepe Myrtle Drive was built in 2004. The utilities and, in this case, the streets were all found to be in acceptable condition. We're recommending that the city council approve the deed of dedication as set forth in the attachments.
Okay. Do we have a motion and second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, sir.
Okay. Discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimous. Item 3, approval of accommodations tax committee recommendations.
Yes, sir. Last March, you all approved
money from the state accommodation taxes. Again, there's two funding sources. We have 3% local accommodation tax. That gives you a lot of control over how that money's spent on local things. We use it for bricks and mortar. We use it for some events. And then we have money that the state gives us that is state accommodation taxes. And we use those for events. And it's very narrow as to what they could use that money for. But basically, it's all for advertisement outside of a 50-mile radius of the city of Aiken. We're very fortunate that we could help about 12 different events every year. One event canceled, so we had some money left from that. And then we had some leftover money that didn't get spent that was allocated the year before. So we re-looked at all of our funding, and we were able to give 100% to all the events and also give $10,000 towards the American Balloon Festival, which will be occurring in about 10 more days. And that'll be occurring on Powder House Road at the Polo Fields. So you had asked us to consider that last March. We were able to do that this past week. And so before you tonight is the approval of the accommodation tax request as presented by the ATAX committee based on their September meeting. And Sam Erb is out here, who is the chairman, if you have any questions.
Sam, do you want to say anything?
I do. Let me just, Roger probably knows this. The garden show is funded then or not funded? Oh, okay. Nothing that didn't get money before is getting any money, except for the
balloon festival.
Yeah,
the festival.
They didn't feel the garden show and the tourism maps and stuff was really bringing people in and advertising the way we want to.
Okay.
But everything else is going to get 100% of what they asked for. And I know that they're not going to spend all the money. We'll probably have money left over again.
The balloon festival.
We're in a very enviable position in that we typically are getting as much money, if not more money, than most of the events are needing. And that's great. So hopefully there'll be other events that will want that in the future that we can assist with. The one thing that the ATAX committee is looking at and will be reviewing at their spring meeting or late winter meeting is there a limit on what we want to give? You know, should we give no more than $30,000, $50,000? You know, what's the limit? I mean, how much advertising do we want some of these, especially polo events that seem to be coming in? I mean, because they could be advertising internationally and on TV and New York and, you know, it's kind of like, and it's a question that's been discussed by them on a few occasions, but it's probably becoming more and more important in the near future.
Sam?
Yeah, Sam, please. Yeah. I want to ask, too, how proactive are we at looking out into the future, if you will, or and seeing things that we want to promote, maybe, that some of this money could go to? I know you have people coming to you asking for X number of dollars. But beyond that, is the committee, and this is something I hadn't even thought about, is the committee looking at using their knowledge and talents, looking at certain areas so that something could be promoted in, or whatever it may be. I don't know what I'm talking about. But something out there that would be good,
right,
if a group would come together and promote it and put, okay, you know, heads on beds. And
right. Well, for the record, Sam Erb, 1556 Dibble Road. I think that, of course, the city having control of the tourism money, I think y'all are the entity that could possibly do that. Now, your bid fees, all the sports activities, so forth, so on, that bring in tremendous amount of business,
right,
is a big help for that. So I agree with that. Now, if you want us to take a look at things to further promote the town and
well,
put heads on
it,
I don't know that we're the entity to do that.
Well, I mean, anybody can do that.
Sure.
We can do that. We can go around the table right now and say, hey, what are we missing? You know, is there something out there we ought to be
hopefully
promoting?
And bringing up that limit, that would make our job easier, and I'll tell you why. When we get normal bids for the steeplechase, the Battle of Aiken, so forth, so on, they're the typical amounts. They do increase, you know, year after year. But bam, you get one for $125,000 or $67,000, and it makes it difficult because you do want to fund everyone. And if you take how we looked at things by percentage, the majority of people got between 77-84%. And then those big things, your polo events, which is great for Aiken. We're not against polo at all. But to only be able to fund them, I don't know what the number was, like a 33%. It seems like we're not wanting to promote them, but they asked for so much money. I agree it would be nice to have a limit. Now, what that limit or how we could come up with that limit would be another question. So,
let me ask a question. What happened to the Triple Crown this year? What do you know?
Yeah, he wrote us a letter. And I don't know.
Do you need my name and home address? 1700 Whiskey Road. I live there anyway. We had been hearing rumors that they were not going to come back, and we finally got confirmation from Mr. McLean, and he said due to the economy he could not get the large corporate sponsors that he had gotten in the past.
Oh, okay.
So that was, it wasn't anything. They were very happy with Aiken,
right,
but it was just money wasn't there.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Can I say one more thing,
Chief? Sure.
I do keep an eye out for events that are upcoming that might want to apply for money. I've talked to the Aiken Trials. Certainly when the Railroad Depot comes online and they're staffing there, I would suggest that they submit an application. Also, the African American Center, when it actually comes online, they need to be asking for applications for money. So I keep things in my head. When they actually come online, I will actually call those people and say, hey, we've got this pot of money, you need to apply. And if they need help on how to fill out the application, I'll sit down and I'll show them step by step how they have to do it.
Very good.
If that helps you out.
Yeah, very good.
I have a question, Lisa, before you go, and I would testify how helpful she is. She's absolutely super. But this money can only be used for, like, advertising primarily.
Yes, we're considered to be in a we're not considered to be in a high tourism district. When you're in Greenville and Charleston and Myrtle Beach, I mean, they get millions of dollars, but that's why they can use it for other things like some sort of brick and mortar type stuff. But when it comes to the smaller communities like Aiken, it's mainly to promote the tourists to come in.
Like, for example, the polo, $67,350. It would just strike me that there's only so much advertising you can spend, no matter what kind of event it is. I mean, you advertise in Greenville and Savannah and Columbia and, you know, a couple of places in Georgia.
They do a lot of international advertising.
Okay.
And you don't want the money sitting around for, you know, what we try to do is if we have any money left over, we do exactly what we've done this time, is to go back and look at our current grantees and try to give them more money. But within a year, you want any rollover money to be spent.
Yeah.
You don't want to have a continuous huge, huge pot of money. So we're very careful about trying to get out as much money as we can. And if we see something on an application and we say, well, you know, you might could do some more advertising here, you know, we're constantly on the lookout for that. And we'll call up folks who have already gotten their grant award and say, you know, you've got, like I'll have to do tomorrow, you've got a little bit more to spend. Here are some suggestions. Because some of them don't know. Some of them are not. Pete Peters is a rare bird. I mean, he does everything perfect with the Battle of Aiken and really promotes it heavily. But there are other folks who don't have that experience. And they need a little bit of guidance till they can get to that level.
So we funded this Polo Silver Cup at $67,500 this year?
That's what they're going to get told tomorrow.
Wow.
If y'all vote on it.
Whether you spend it or not, that's the question. Because now they're at the... That event is right here.
Yeah.
So they're probably not going to be able to spend it So that's why we know we'll probably have money left over.
We probably will have some rollover money, and then it goes back into the pot. An organization can't keep it and hold on to it for a year. It has to go back in the pot.
Tell me why we didn't get any.
Who is we?
The City of Aiken and the...
Oh, with the tourist brochures? We felt like that was more appropriate for the 30% money. I just deal with the 65% where you go out into the community and they get those grants. But we also get 30% of that money, and the city is the tourism entity that basically advertises Aiken as a whole, and that was something that could be very easily taken care of out of that 30% money, and then it would leave more money for the actual events.
So they're in line to get some of that 30% money?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, sir.
Okay.
The Garden Club will get some, too?
No, ma'am. They have gotten ATAX money in the past, and based on their surveys, it is more of a local event. It's a good event, but it's a local event.
The Aiken Polo Club at $42,000 and the 302 Polo at $67,000, do they work hand-in-hand in promoting?
No.
They don't, and it's an interesting group of people to work with. They're all great, but it's kind of hard to get them to work hand-in-hand together. It would be nice if they would. But they're very, I don't know if cliquish is the word.
So it's two separate groups?
Yes, ma'am. One is the Aiken Polo Club is really the group that goes out of Whitney Field. I call them the more historical group.
Mm-hmm.
And the folks with the Silver Cup, that's more Adam Snow.
Kind of a city group and a county group.
Lisa, you touched on this a little bit, I think. But why doesn't the Thoroughbred folks request some money for the first leg of the Triple Crown?
Well, actually, that's probably going to happen.
Okay.
I've been trying to convince them for like 3 years to do this, and I think I've finally got them convinced where they're going to put in an application, because it really could help not only promote the Aiken Trials, but it could also help promote the training track and getting more stables in here.
Mm-hmm.
Also, to fill all those stalls up. You know, I'm all for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Do we have a motion and a second?
I so move, Mr. Mayor, that we approve the recommendations of the ATAX committee.
Okay. And who's going to second it?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Yes. Passes unanimously. Okay. Item 3. No, that was item 3. Under petitions, request for signs at Rose Hill Estates. Mr. Ledoux.
Okay, our last item on the agenda tonight is approval of signs at Rose Hill Estate. As you all know, Rose Hill Estate is a very uniquely situated complex not in the heart of Aiken, but almost in the heart of Aiken. And they would like to have 4 signs to help identify where their parking's at and where their facilities are at, and to make some announcements as to upcoming events that may be happening there. You'd worked with them in the past on allowing them to do certain things, which they are moving forward on, with dinners and with different outside events. There is a mistake in my memo where it says Lancaster on here. That really should be Florence Street on this. They did have to go before BZA. Again, this is a two-step process. Anytime you want to have signs in the right-of-way, because signs are not allowed in the right-of-way, advertising or depicting a business, you have to get BZA's approval. BZA approved it at their last meeting just a few weeks ago. The second step is coming back to City Council and asking City Council for approval. The signs that they want at each location are described. Some of them are very, very small, just a little, like 2 by 3 foot signs. And then the larger sign is the one that is on Barnwell that would allow them to display the various events that will be taking place, upcoming type events. So before you tonight are 4 different signs for Rose Hill Estate as described in this attached memorandum that went to the BZA.
And these would be permanent signs, right?
These are permanent signs, okay. Yes.
Okay. Do we have a motion and second?
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve the permanent signs at Rose Hill Estate.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, second. Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay. Before we vote to go into executive session, I think Dick has an appointment he'd like to mention.
Yeah, I was going to say, we forgot
nomination.
That, and I have some. Yeah.
And I have a couple.
All right.
So do I.
Dick, go ahead, Dick Smith.
It is my pleasure to nominate for another term Keith Shaver for the Community Development Committee. He's doing a great job there. I'm glad he agreed to stay.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to reappoint Timothy Redd to the Building Code of Appeals Committee. He has agreed to stay. And John Owens to the General Aviation Commission.
Okay.
And Mr. Mayor, I'd like to reappoint Frank Boatwright, who has eagerly consented to serving on the General Aviation Commission again. And Dr. John Gladden resigned from the Environmental Committee, and the person that will replace him is W. Frank Wright, who is a former manager retired from Savannah Riverside Department of Energy.
That's W. Frank Wright?
Correct.
W-R-I-G-H-T?
Yeah, correct.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And Mr. Mayor, I'd like to reappoint Don Barnes to the General Aviation Committee. And Mariella Brown to the Community Development Committee. Did find out today that I'll have a vacancy on Recreation. I understand Joanna Gibbs has resigned.
That is correct.
And I will have a name at the next meeting. I have someone in mind, but I couldn't get to him today.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's great.
And that leaves me with the Accommodations Tax Committee, of which I will have a recommendation at the next meeting.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have mine, too, next time. Okay, very good.
And I have one other item, Mr. Mayor.
We need to, if you agree, go into executive session for a contractual matter. Do we have a motion and a second?
Can I mention something else?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. I noticed today, and I know there's an identity theft law that's taking effect in December, but I noticed today when I got my notice of payment going to the check that the thing they mailed to me has got a Social Security number on it. I, for the life of me, can't begin to think why that should be done.
Yeah, what is that? I'm sorry.
It's a statement that how much money we got paid.
Oh, the city.
Yeah, the city that sends it out to us. And maybe we could look at that. There's no... There's no need for Social Security numbers to be on some of these items.
Is there some reason for that, you know, Roger?
It's just the way the system's set up.
It's the way it's set up.
Nobody else has said
like
anything.
40, 50 years?
I would move we go into executive session.
Okay, we got a motion.
Second.
So we have a second. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. And this gentleman sitting out here has been very nice. Came to our city council meeting because he just knew this was the most important thing going on Monday night, right? Other than the Mags go watch a ball game, which is another important thing for some people. Thank you.
What happened to Mr. Johnson?
He won.